of ESPN. How you doing, Royce?
I'm doing excellent today, my friends. How are you guys?
We're doing fantastic. Okay, there was one thing I wanted to ask you. I think I let you off the hook the other day. We're having a discussion about James Harden. It's a happy Friday, so we're not trying to peel back too many layers of the onion. But there have been a couple things here, like in the last 2 weeks or so, that have made me just kind of go, And I remember back when it all happened, when James was traded, what I had been told, and was kind of very similar to what we're hearing. But James Harden on the E60, and this wasn't new, but they replayed over the weekend. He was, you know, very upset and very emotional about the trade.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, okay, that's from James. I actually bought it. I know a lot of people don't buy it. But the thing that put it over the top for me, if you read what Nick Collison said and what you wrote in his words about that, as he called it, a gut punch, and he talked about going to James's house, and he talked about the shock that they were both in and just how difficult that was, that didn't sound to me like, even from the vantage point of Nick Collison, that James Harden wanted out or James Harden had any idea that he was actually going to be out.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly makes you kind of feel that way. And you know, I think this is one of those situations, Dusty, based on, you know, the reporting that I've done on it and things that I've heard over the years, that, you know, I think that you can hear both sides of this story, and I think the truth kind of lies in the middle of it all. I think that in a lot of ways, James Harden, I think, was stunned, because I think that he was kind of shocked that the Thunder went ahead and pulled that trigger and went ahead and did it. But I can say with 100% confidence that James Harden was well aware that the Thunder were going to trade him if he didn't take that deal. He was made very aware of that. And I think maybe he sat there and he thought, no, they're just bluffing. You know, that's just a big bluff. They're not going to actually go through with it. And maybe that's where some of the shock kind of came from, or that, you know, there was maybe that kind of instantaneous regret of like, oh my gosh, why didn't I take it? You know, but, you know, I don't think that this was the type of thing that James Harden was, you know, openly discussing with teammates before the deal happened. You know, I think that he was kind of handling his business internally. I mean, the chips were on the table pretty clearly from both sides. And, you know, I can say that both sides, I think, were fairly transparent with each other going up into that final day on Saturday. And, you know, once the Thunder basically made their final offer and said, this is the final offer, and if you don't take it, we have a deal lined up and we will trade you. And he turned it down. You know, I mean, it's one of those things where he can be surprised about it. But, you know, I think that James Harden has, you know, I've seen the E60 thing myself, Dusty, and I think there has been kind of a desire to kind of revise history a little bit on that. But, you know, Harden and his representation kind of put the Thunder's feet to the fire with that whole situation by what they were pushing for and what they wanted. You know, I mean, the Thunder, look, was James...
We can't go back to that time. We can't go back to that time because we've seen how it unfolded. I mean, James Harden became a superstar. It's not, it wasn't that, James Harden was not a superstar at that time.
Exactly. And, you know, it's funny to me, Mark, you know, I hear people say this a lot now, that, man, maybe they should have traded Westbrook. Well, yeah, as you sit here in 2018, you might could say that. But if Sam Presti would have turned around and traded Russell Westbrook, a guy that just dropped 43 points in an NBA Finals game, had been, I think, to 3 All-Star games, was a tried-and-true superstar in the league, and traded that guy and held on to the one that shrunk up and shriveled in the finals, people would go, what are you doing? This is the worst trade in NBA history. Yeah, maybe you could have gotten a little bit better. You could have gotten a bigger haul for James Harden. For Russell Westbrook rather than James Harden. But it would have been one of the biggest risks that anybody has ever taken if they did it. But you can sit here today and say it, like you said, this is all hindsight. And this all is based upon the fact that James Harden has become a Hall of Fame player. He's going to win the MVP this year. And I don't think the Thunder saw that necessarily happening. They believe James Harden was very, very good. But to this level of good, I think that there was a lot of skepticism around the league about how good he was. Look at the trade offers that were on the table. Look at the trade offers that were turned down. I mean, the Washington Wizards turned down Bradley Beal for James Harden. The Toronto Raptors turned down a deal that was based around Jonas Valanciunas. The Thunder offered him up for Klay Thompson. All these teams were turning down deals for James Harden because they were skeptical themselves.
What is the what's the future for Corey Brewer and Raymond Felton? Would they care enough to come back and play in Oklahoma City next season? Is it retirement, or is there demand for him around the league next season?
I don't know if there's a lot of demand for Corey Brewer. You know, I think that the Thunder would probably have a spot for him on a minimum level deal, Mark, just because, you know, Andre Roberson, I don't know is going to be completely healthy and ready to go on opening night. You know, there's no really telling where Andre Roberson is going to be in terms of health. You know, there's been some feeling that maybe it might be until December until he's back to full health. So, you know, you might want to hold on to Corey Brewer for that reason alone. But there's not going to be a lot of market around him for the league. Now, Raymond Felton, I think that there might be a little bit of market. I don't think he'll necessarily get much more than the vet minimum. But he's somebody I think the Thunder would be very interested in bringing back just because of how effective he was. Look, Ray Felton was really what kept the Thunder from having just an atrociously bad bench. Without Raymond Felton, the Thunder would have had just a terrible second unit. So I think you need Felton back. You know, the issue with him is, you know, in a situation where if Paul George were to re-sign, the Thunder would then kind of be looking to maybe not pinch pennies, but maybe be mindful of their financial situation. And a vet minimum for Raymond Felton at his age, with I don't know what year he would be in, maybe 13 or 14, versus a vet minimum for a guy in his 20s, you know, you save some significant dollars there. So, you know, maybe they might want to survey the market. But I'll say this. Felton has been pretty open about the fact that he would like to stay in Oklahoma City. And I think if Thunder extend him an offer, I think he'll probably accept it.
I'm glad you mentioned that if Paul George, if he re-signs, they may be basically pinching pennies. Jeremy yeah. Grant, I think, is of the utmost importance that you keep him. What do you think the chances is Jeremy Grant staying dependent or not dependent on if Paul George signs? And I'm just wondering, do the Thunder have a number? And does that number raise if Paul George isn't in the fold, if they don't have that many dollars already allocated in salary?
Yeah, absolutely, Dusty. I mean, I think that Jeremy Grant's future with the Thunder is directly tied to what Paul George does. And I think in some ways it's also tied to how the Carmelo Anthony situation plays out as well. If the Thunder can kind of unburden themselves of Carmelo Anthony, you know, I think it makes keeping Jeremy Grant far more tenable, and I think it makes it far more realistic, and I think it makes it far more necessary as well, because Grant would become a much more significant player on the roster. But with in terms of George and how that affects it, for sure, you know, I think that the Thunder probably have a pretty solid number in mind that they're willing to go to. Because look, it's one of those things where, you know, you can sign Jeremy Grant, and if you get him at a deal that you think is market value or even below, look, he becomes a tradable asset. I mean, this is a business, this is the way it works. And while Jeremy Grant would maybe be, you know, I don't think he's going to necessarily be sacrificing dollars to stay with the Thunder, but if maybe the offers don't come in at a number that the Thunder expected them to, and maybe they come in below market value just based on how free agency plays out, and the Thunder get him for less than that, they're gonna re-sign him, even though people might react to that and say, oh my goodness, how could you do that? Your luxury tax bill. Thunder are going to sign him probably just for the fact that he's a valuable asset, and they have an opportunity to put that on the roster. So I do think it is tied, though, to what Paul George is, just in terms of where the numbers are going to fall at.
Did you ever see the movie Wildcats with Goldie Hawn?
Great movie.
You know what her name was in that movie?
No, I haven't seen that.
Molly McGrath. Anyway, speaking of a female coach, Detroit Pistons, I saw a little bit of rumor online that they might be interested in hiring Becky Hammond. Do you think that Becky Hammond could be hired as a head coach this go-around?
I don't think so. I mean, look, this is a loaded topic, and everybody's quite sensitive about it. I think everybody's a little bit afraid to talk real about
everyone
it.
Everyone loves everyone here. It's a Jackie yeah. Moon. It's a Flint Tropics. You know, we're okay.
But look, it is unprecedented in a lot of regards for a second row assistant coach in the NBA to jump the line in this regard. And I'm not saying it's necessarily, you know, she might be incredibly qualified. She's a professional basketball player. So, you know, if you want to look at her in that regard, you know, it's no different than Jason Kidd or Derek Fisher getting a job or Jerry Stackhouse potentially jumping in. But, you know, she doesn't have any head coaching experience. She has very limited NBA. I mean, look, Brett Brown was Greg Popovich's assistant coach for 17 years in San Antonio before he got his head coaching gig with the Philadelphia 76ers. So, you know, is Becky Hammond qualified? I don't know. I mean, I can't sit here and tell you that. I have no idea if she's ready to be an NBA head coach. That's for the people in the interview process to decide. I can just tell you that it would be fairly unprecedented for her to make that big of a leap from a second-row NBA assistant coach to a head coach in the NBA.
I think it's crazy, to be honest with you. I'll just say it. I think it's crazy. For all the things you just said, it'd be unprecedented. Put that she's a woman aside. Like, what you just said is all true. She hasn't even sat on the bench yet of an NBA basketball team. She hasn't been a first assistant, a second assistant. Like, I mean, there's typically, not always, but there's a you know, an order of progression, right? I mean, it's kind of the way that it goes, at least right. the way it's gone in NBA history. So it would almost feel like if she jumped all those hoops, if she jumped all those steps, that it would be strictly because she's a woman and someone's wanting to make a point.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically where I think things stand, but I think most people are a little bit afraid to say that, Dusty.
Oh, am I not supposed to say that out loud?
No, that's what I'm saying.
This is what we do on the radio, though. Like, all the things that some people are thinking, we have to verbalize them.
No, you're exactly right. No, I'm not criticizing.
And I'm not saying she's not qualified or she is qualified. All I'm saying is that, I mean, if things are done a certain way in the NBA forever and all of a sudden they aren't, well, then
you kind of have to peel it back and say, well, why are we doing this? And I think the answer is standing there quite obvious in everyone's face. And look, and it works the opposite way. There should be no one that should say that, you know, she shouldn't be hired because she's a woman, because that's not fair either. You know what
Correct.
I mean? But I think that if you want to be fair in this situation, then you have to look at it from both ends of the spectrum. And I think it's exactly what you're saying, that if she's going to jump the line, you kind of have to ask yourself, well, why is she doing it? And look, you can play out the she's a professional basketball player card, and I can understand that, but she doesn't have experience in this professional sports league. The NBA is different than the WNBA. That's just a reality. So she is a professional basketball player, but she was a female professional basketball player, so it's different.
You guys know that there's already been a precedent set here, and it's not Molly McGrath.
Not Wildcats?
I mean, we've had a female head coach for the New York Knicks. Can you name him? Can you name her?
Can I name him?
Her. Can you name her?
No.
Whoopi Goldberg and Eddie. You didn't watch Eddie
back in
the day. I was the only one. I was the only one that watched it.
There have been I think you're literally the only person that's ever seen it.
Been very few good movies made about basketball.
I don't know. I mean, there was one like Celtic Pride. Did you ever see that one? That was pretty good.
Fish that saved Pittsburgh.
You want a man, right?
I couldn't make it through.
Does Space Jam count?
Yeah, absolutely counts. Hey, Royce, can you give me a prediction? What's going to happen this weekend? We got Eastern Conference Finals Saturday. We got Western Conference Finals on Sunday.
Give me the Cavs in Game 3 just because – I got to believe in LeBron. I can't believe LeBron is going to get swept in a playoff series. So give me the Cavs. And I think, you know, the Warriors historically play wonderful in game fours. Game threes, they've always kind of fallen asleep for some reason. But I think this game three is different. But I do think this game three is different because I think the Rockets got their attention. Look, I've got the Rockets winning the series still. And I'm not backing down quite from that yet. But I think the Warriors will win game three.
I think game four is the one that they can steal on the road. I'm with you on that, Royce. I think game three, Golden State, as bad as they got blown out, they're going to show up to play Sunday night. So,
yep, agreed.
Hey, great stuff. Hey, appreciate it, Royce.
All right, see y'all.
All right, there you go, Royce Young.